Well, this is the hour we take your calls with our two special guests, Doctors J.J. and Desiree Hertak, as we talk about their latest work, Giza's Industrial Complex. More to talk to with them about when we come back, and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Doctors J.J. and Desiree Hertak, as we talk about their latest book, Giza's Industrial Complex. There are pyramids, J.J. and Desiree, all over the planet. Were they all power sources everywhere, or were they used for different purposes?
I can't make a generalization about power sources, but certainly most of them were used for energy entrainment or the raising of consciousness. We just published a very major paper in the most pristine journal in Latin America called Archaeology, Arqueología, Volume 54, which covers 25 years of looking at acoustical physics and the construction of all the major pyramids in Yucatan. And this was debated for 10 years by the leading archaeologists who did not want to accept the premise that there may be acoustical physics involved in the vibratory rates of why these rooms were stacked and geometrically arranged as they were. But finally, we won the game in showing systematically our research throughout the world is true in no matter what culture or country. So we don't need to go off the drawing board to outer space. We can simply say that within the temperament of human genius is the realization that we can pull from the fibers of vibration within our heart and soul to create structures that vibrate according to our needs, spiritually, physically, and psychologically.
And, you know, Dr. Jack wrote a book in the 1970s called The Keys of Enoch, and we talk about the fact that there are vortex key grid points around the planet, and it seems that in most of these grid points there is pyramidal energy. So mm-hmm. We feel it's part of the whole, we'll say,
world grid
and Earth-generating system of energy that we put out as a planetary system.
Also, we were instrumental in publishing the pyramids on Mars in 1973 in the Keys
of Enoch. Right, I remember that.
The first actual release of actual pictures from Mars via Viking Mariner 9's probes. And we go into great detail in terms of mathematical, geophysical conditions that are now being quietly accepted as the next phase of pushing out our frontier into outer space. So it wouldn't surprise us that eventually we would find in the greater cosmos other civilizations that employ pyramidal energy or the pyramidal model of evolution, because it's natural to the human psyche.
Would you both theorize that, at least in Egypt, that there was definitely extraterrestrial help?
Certainly, all of the records point to what is called Imsak, the region of the imperishable star gods. And given that even Dr. J. Allen Hynek published many years ago The Precession of the Equinoxes, all of this area of ancient astronomy is based upon the Pyramid of Egypt, suggests they were in touch. The great mathematicians, physicists, cosmologists of the ancient world were in touch with the cosmic forces. We would call them the higher engineers of evolution. We would call them the cosmic thinkers or the architects of the various ages and periods of evolution.
And in the papyri, of course, it talks about the fact that the pharaoh would go on its way to Orion. And so this is part of the system. And Dr. Jack, again, in his book, The Keys of Enoch, actually was the first to point out, now we love Robert Bavel, but he said the three pyramids are like the three stars of the belt of Orion. Dr. Hertak actually was the first to point out that one of the star shafts in the Great Pyramid goes to Orion and the other goes to the area of Alpha Draconis. So actually, we feel that they are aligned with that. And it's interesting to find out much later, of course, now that we're actually in the Orion arm of the Milky Way. So there was a lot known that, you know, wouldn't have been known just from this planetary system.
So to simplify, the Great Pyramid is also, in our usage of terms, an astrophysical computer showing distances over 1,400 light years to the three stars in the belt of Orion, which suggests an earlier date for the construction of the Great Pyramid, but also a model that has its vitality in other cultures, from China and India to North and South America, who have smaller and sometimes larger models, as we've seen more recent research in Guatemala, of the pyramidal principle of energy as a source not only of providing for basic needs, but also as a model for astrophysical calculation.
Tell us about the amphora jars and how they use them.
These are jars that were constructed so what was electrified water would not touch the earth. So the jars basically were constructed to be put in wooden holders or frames And so he could put hundreds of them, even thousands of them, in various Egyptian ships. One was found in recent times off the coast of Brazil. We know the Egyptians, through the Phoenicians, were able to get special metals from all parts of the world, including work that they were doing off the delta of the Mississippi, believe it or not, in getting the best mineral resources, special metals that they were used for their metallurgical needs. Remember, the Egyptians had a way of gilding special stones and jewels with gold veneer, a process that has been lost. Even the best chemist, electric chemist in Switzerland and Germany did not know how the Egyptians were able to do this. Now we have found clues to how they were able to harness the electrification of water and minerals.
Right. So these jars obviously don't have a base they could just sit down on. Some people say, well, you could shove them into the sand or something like that. But in actuality, they usually sat on a wood base. So the idea is if it was structured water or Brown's gas, which usually dissipates after a while, especially if it's in touch with the earth, this would be a way of preserving that water for longer periods of time.
When you were both writing the book, Giza's Industrial Complex, was there that moment of, oh, my God, I didn't know this? Was there anything
was
like that?
Eureka experience, which means the idea of finding really the golden vibration. We would call it the golden section of information. In other words, the Egyptians, in so many words, were giving us a puzzle of how we have to bring together the physical sciences, biological sciences, the musical aspects, we would call it the artistic, humanistic sciences, and to build basically a stepping stone of knowledge.
And I would say that, you know, of course, we wrote this book also with our friend James Brown, who brought up at the beginning the idea that water had been instrumental. And then we actually had spent some time by the Hawara Pyramid connected with Lake Morris. And that area has this large lost labyrinth. And
3,000 rooms underground, considered to be also water cells for energy production.
But the lake also, Lake Morris, is a saltwater lake. And we had talked about you could use fresh water for electrolysis, but you can also better use salt water. In fact, this is one thing we wanted to bring up because recently at Stanford University, Professor Dai has actually shown that you can use salt water. He uses special anodes and cathodes with nickel on it so that it's not corrosive. That's the problem with salt water. It keeps being corrosive.
Right.
But can you imagine, George, if we could actually have literally it's free energy using salt water to produce hydrogen gas that
we
power our houses. I mean, it's free energy. It's clean energy.
Yeah.
The only byproduct, I have to say, is water. So, you know, that's what we need right now.
Clean water is the only byproduct. And so we, as members of the Hydrogen Society, recommend that we keep our eyes on the bright side and not pay too much attention to the negative side that says we have no alternatives, there's nothing out there in the new horizons of science. That's why we are futurists, because the future is part of the evolutionary impulse.
And Lake Morris, actually, according to Herodotus, the ancient historian, said there were two huge pyramids. They actually went 300 feet into the air and 300 feet into the water
of Lake Morris.
Lake Morris, and that was part, we believe, of one of the greater generating systems.
And we have this ancient lithograph from Russia by one of our colleagues. It's a very rare document. So those of you who are interested in the, shall we say, the treasury of knowledge in this book will be treated to this picture drawn in the 19th century by Russian explorers from earlier information they had from Egyptian text of these huge pyramids coming out of Lake Morris.
And doesn't salt water have more conductivity?
Yeah, no, in fact, if you had actually something like, now they're even finding 7 to 8% water to one part, 7 to 8% salt to one part water, you can get a lot of energy out of it. And so it's much better than fresh water in terms of electrolysis. So this is something that really needs to be done. I mean, sadly, this guy at Stanford, who's doing incredible research connected with the San Francisco Bay Area, which is also where we're based most of the time, you know, he probably only has thousands of dollars. He should be having millions of dollars. This is a transformation. It's actually better in a certain sense than even electric cars, because electric cars still have to take energy from the grid, and we need to get energy into that grid that's pure and clean.
Let's go to the phones. Maria's with us in Fuquay, North Carolina. First-time caller. Hi, Maria.
Hi. I'm so excited to talk to you, George. 20-year listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks. What got you to call?
About Egypt. And I want to tell you a quick story. We went to Egypt in 2011, and my children and I went into the largest pyramid of Giza, and you get to work your way up to the top. Well, what happened was it blew up our brand new camera, and it filled our cell phones. Like, our cell phones were almost on empty.
Really?
There was like a half a bar left, and we came out. They were fully charged. But that, to me, wasn't the strange part. The strange part was, and maybe your guests can answer this, you have no sense of time when you're in there. I couldn't tell you if it took me 5 minutes or if we were in there for 24 hours.
Really?
Very strange.
JJ, Desiree, do you lose time in the pyramids?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to repeat again, this IPMO University, you can look at it on the internet, that they saw the power of electromagnetic energy in these internal chambers. They were using from 200 to 600 meters to model what was going on inside. There's a lot of energy in the chambers and then underneath the pyramid itself. But actually, I had an experience, and so did another friend of mine years later. You didn't even remember my experience. When we were sitting there doing a meditation in the King's Chamber, that literally the walls dropped away and you felt like you were just out in space. It was an amazing phenomena. But it's the energy of the pyramid. We know this from the Russian pyramids.
Interesting.
A lot, that there's a healing energy that's present, that there's a lot of different factors.
Right, and this experiment we recorded on film and on tape, so people who are interested, we have a CD that's available called The Opening of the Great Pyramid, and that will actually reproduce for the listener the sounds that we use for our test, a musical vibratory test. So the pyramid does create an energy vortex for healing, for the nutriment of the inner self or the soul, even for what some would call heart math, the idea that there are sacred geometric forms that come to mind under the right condition of inner peace.
There has been talk that sound resonance moved those blocks. What do you think of that?
Well, that was, of course, part of the mystery of the Sphinx, and we agree with that. Dr. Jack was in that, and, of course, that was John Anthony West and Boris Said, and when Shock, you know, came out with the Sphinx. We agree wholeheartedly that really something like a UFO, if one wanted to say, hovering over, could move those blocks into place. The only other good explanation, and this has been coming out as well, is the Davidovich theory, which is where the blocks were made in situ. And it's interesting that someone actually from Drexel University, who's Egyptian-born, has actually thoroughly studied the blocks themselves and has said, yes, they're actually amorphous, which is not natural for blocks that would be born in nature. But if they were put together, and he's a cement expert at the university, he says that they very well could have been put into place, made in place on the Great Pyramid itself.
Let's go to Kingman, Arizona. Ryan's with us now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, hey, can you hear me fine, George?
Yeah.
Okay, anyways, I just want to, because I know I got about 10 seconds here, so I'll say this real quick on the air. I have 3 past life recalls, and one of my past life recalls, I believe that I was actually a maintenance worker on one of the smaller pyramids, and what I remember is they had... And I know this is going to sound really far out there. I remember being a maintenance worker on the pyramids in a past life, and they had big combustion motors that were generators. I remember electric lines, big, humongous doors that my job was to maintain them, oil them, keep the cogs and the gears going, and I would let giants in and out. And I remember this as if it was yesterday. Of course, these could be, because I heard you talking about past life recalling, and that's just one of my past memories. And I believe that if anybody else out there has any past life memories of possibly being an Egyptian or being around at that time, I would just kind of encourage them to call in.
I like that, Ryan. That's always a great possibility. You know, Desiree, we get all kinds of calls. Who knows, right?
Well, I would say, one of the things that stimulated this book with our friend James Brown, he was almost about to buy Coral Castle in Homestead.
Uh-huh.
One time it was up for sale, but then the family decided to keep it and then put it into the city. But in actuality, if you're familiar with that, it has very similar technology. When Ed Lee Scallon died, they found that they actually found copper wires everywhere around. And, of course, when the people came in, they just said, oh, this is a bunch of junk. Let's tear it down. But he actually had a whole system going, and he was able to, of course, move these really 60-ton stones or even more.
All by himself.
Yeah, all by himself. He put it in place all by himself. He moved, you know, and they could move. You could just push these 10 doors, and they would just spin around. So it reminded me exactly what your colleague said.
So he was implying the principles of paraphysics to move structures.
No, but also electromagnetic energy. It seemed much that they were using electromagnetic energy, which also, of course, is something that people are trying to use as well.
He knew about magnetism and would always tell people he knew the secrets of how the pyramids were built.
And he went to that particular place. He came all the way
from Latvia.
And he came right there because he felt, and I grew up in Miami, so I really appreciate that.
But he knew a world grid point was there, right off the Bermuda area, and that's where he set up shop. Very diminutive, very passive individual, but had this enormous Herculean-type skills to move something that we haven't been able to fully understand and appreciate.
And they can't even fix it now. They broke the door, and they can't fix it again. Maybe your friend needs to go help.
And that door was, you could move it with like a finger, couldn't you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mary in New Jersey, welcome to the program. Hi, Mary.
Hello, how are you? You're saying Osiris' skin is green? I think it ties into the Bible because it said the one sitting on the throne to look at was like a sardine and a jasper stone, and round about his throne was a rainbow in sight like into an emerald, and the tribe of Judah was they had an emerald stone. So it just
sounds a lot like
Osiris's.
All right, let me comment on that. The tribe of Judah, of course, is connected with the Sphinx in the mystical side of Judaic history and tradition. The Lion of Judah represents the messianic figure. It also represents the Sphinx figure. And if one takes the deeper interpretation of Genesis chapter 49, the coming of the messianic figure comes between the paws of the Lion or the Sphinx. And so the tribe of Judah is the one that provides the messianic figure, which also represents the speeding up of new knowledge, the entrance to the higher worlds of creation and the understanding of the divine principles behind the ancient metaphors.
And what's very interesting, the end of Genesis ends with what, Dr. Hertag?
It ends with Joseph being buried in Egypt, and there's a whole liturgy of lamentation that's used, that's put in specifically to remind the reader that there's a musical side of spirituality, we would call it consciousness cosmology, that has to be employed to understand these ancient rituals of going into the ground, which means look there because you will find other documentation that will explain why Egypt appears so many times in the Old Testament as a clue to the greater story of the Exodus, ultimately of the human race off this planet into the higher world.
And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of
Egypt. New Testament book of Acts affirms this reality.
What do your colleagues say about your book, Giza's Industrial Complex?
Well, we just got it out, so we're looking for more and more feedback on
Elizabeth Rauscher, the great physicist from UC Berkeley and also Lawrence Livermore Lab, said it really brings to light forgotten knowledge. And, of course, you may or may not know this, Pat Flanagan, who was part of the early expedition, said it after 2,000 years of research in Egypt, the book is the most important breakthrough in energy sources used in ancient Egypt. The evidence of saltwater batteries mastered by the ancient Egyptians is the energetic Rosetta Stone that brings many of the missing pieces of Egypt together. So I can paraphrase by simply saying, we bring out the illustrations, we bring out the pathways of 40 years of discovery.
But we're also interested in feedback and some engineers getting with us to even do more and more research in this level.
That would be great. All right, stay with us, you two. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Doctors J.J. and Desiree Hertak, their website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. They've got a couple of them, as a matter of fact. And their book is called Giza's Industrial Complex. And we'll be back in a moment. Next hour, we're going to be talking about the afterlife right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we're going live down under to Australia. Peter Smith joins us as we talk about spiritual regression, hypnotherapy, as well as some of the stories of past lives and reincarnation. So make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast show. And we're going to come back with final calls with JJ and Desiree Hertak in just a moment as well on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, Doctors J.J. and Desiree Hertak with us. Their latest book, of course, Giza's Industrial Complex. Website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. I've got to commend both of you for just incredible investigative work in this subject matter. I mean, it's award-winning, both of you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, George. We're very honored to be here as world educators and researchers, and we want to emphasize to our world audience that we must realize there are solutions. There is hope, and we can raise our consciousness to a new frontier. I mean, that's the whole thrust of the great minds, the great prophets, the great mystics, that we are part of a much higher plan of creation, not to be dissolved by political misfits who misuse our energy resources.
Or even energy technologies that are fossil-based. We need to change that. We can have the technology to do that. We have the ability to do that.
What got you both into this entire area that you've been working in for all these years? Not just going to Egypt, but everything that you've covered.
Well, of course, Dr. Jack had a unique experience in the early 1970s where he actually was able to have a type of Merkaba or energy technology experience where he was beyond this reality and looked down and saw all.
I was given basically through divine grace an opportunity to have a higher consciousness awakening of seeing that we were part of a much larger scheme of evolution, we would call it spiritual evolution, that we were in a schoolhouse and eventually we'd graduate into a cosmic university. So that's that time of realizing the secrets of the ancient world are being solved, and also the future gates of opportunity and co-participation with the cosmic families being quickened.
Super. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for what you do, and thank you for taking my call. Desiree, JJ, your research is top shelf, and your enthusiasm is contagious. My question, I'm going to give a question, a couple of comments, and then repeat the question again. Are the builders still alive? And think about it. I mean, all the legends about temples worldwide suggest that the builders of temples became immortal. They became gods and goddesses, so to speak. Whether you're talking Giza Plateau, Göbekli Tepe, or even off-planet like Cydonia on Mars. And my question is, are the builders still present? Perhaps they were publicly visible on stage, so to speak, 10,000 years ago, but then, as they say in the CIA, they went dark. They step back into the shadows. Perhaps they're manifesting through secret societies. Maybe they graduated. Maybe they ascended. What are your thoughts on this? Are the builders still alive?
Well, I like the last idea you had, the maybe they graduated, maybe they ascended. And Dr. Jack, his original book, as George was asking about that, is The Keys of Enoch. And, you know, Enoch is also kind of considered the scribe, and so was Thoth. Thoth was a major player, maybe even in connection with some of the building of the pyramid, mythologically, if nothing else. And we believe that those builders are going to be returning. We don't think that they're necessarily here on the planet the whole time, although the Kabbalists talk about the 36 wise men that are always present. But we do feel that they are returning because we do feel we're at a critical time of this planet, and we feel technology is part of it, consciousness growth is part of it, and many other aspects that we're seeing around the world.
In Psalms, we're told that we are ultimately in the mid-heavens, that we are called sons of the Most High, B'nai Elyon. So the idea of spiritual graduation is there in both Old and New Testament. Even some of the forgotten books, no longer in the Bible, reference the ongoing nature of the body of the physical going into the transphysical, going into the body of light. So clearly, to answer your question, we are being prepared to receive those who originally were the instructors to put the books in the earth. They're the ones coming back, bringing the ancient scrolls and books out of the earth in the sense of a planetary awakening to a great transformation, what some would call a planetary ascension event.
Let's go to Nathan in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the show. Nathan, go ahead, sir.
Hey, thank you so much. And I wanted to say thank you to also Coast to Coast, George. And
thank you.
It sounds really positive. Hopefully we can transcend as a race.
Gosh, I
hope
so.
The war machines and the death that we see unnecessarily killing. So the question I had was, have you come across anything similar to what Gary David had done his research in the Southwest, the Orions on that kind of thing, and then also the Akashic records, that, so to speak? And I'll take my answer off the air and have a good evening.
Okay. Which one of you two might want that?
Well, we know, for example, the Akashic records traditions have been around Irvin Laszlo, a great writer, thinker, musician in Hungary, has come out with his latest book on the Akashic Record. We accept the fact that there is a higher treasury of knowledge that guides the evolutionary experiences we call the physical three-dimensional life on planets like Mother Earth. But there are so many specialists in these areas, one has to be very careful. Those that emphasize the positive side of the gifts of the divine and the human dimension, of course, are those that we recommend, those who understand there's light on the end of the tunnel and that we are being received the abundance of the gifts of the divine spirit.
And I didn't get his first question, but we do feel that there was a connection, at least with the Mayan culture and in some cases with Egypt. And then the Mayans also had actually come, and we have some evidence for this. We've done a small video called The Mayan Connection, that they came also to, we'll say, the Southwest and to other parts of the Northeast as well, with all the mounds that you find around. So there seems to be a great wisdom tradition that is prevalent throughout the world. We've done a lot of work in China and India.
All of these diverse cultures are linked by sacred language and sacred geometry. So there's a side that intellectual scholars have overlooked, and that is the pulsating knowledge that is reserved to what we will call the crown of knowledge, or the seventh seal, the opening of the higher mind into the realization that there's a treasury of knowledge that's awaiting us, or what Daniel the great prophet tells us, knowledge will speed up at the end of time, or the time cycle of Mother Earth. We believe that this is the time that the doors of the past and the future being opened, so we have great opportunities of growth and spiritual expansion.
It's almost as if the great intelligence traveled to different areas on this planet, teaching the indigenous people all these secrets.
That's right, and that's why even the Great Pyramid is considered by secular thinkers to be a Bible in stone, and why we have similar altars of knowledge in the thicket of the jungles of Brazil and in the mountains of Colombia that we visited. We have found pyramids, smaller pyramids, even in Central Asia. So all major cultures have had the pyramid, which in my terminology is the stepping stone to working with the divine family. The pyramid, of course, is a conceptual image of light coming from the sky, falling in a triangular pattern, which gives the mind, body, spirit a sense of trinitization or opportunity to utilize both sides of the mind, the metaphysical as well as the scientific. We are at a time now where we are being given the dramatic gifts of the mind and the higher spirit. The ancients would call it neshama, the soul spirit, which means incredible knowledge is being revealed to us in a pace that never before has been thought of until quite recent times.
Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen and lady, Desiree. I've got a couple of comments. I'm big on free energy, as George knows. Mm-hmm. I've always been looking at things that produce free energy. Dr. Yamamoto from Japan, perhaps the greatest inventor of all time, I think over 10,000 patents to his name, produced a gas turbine engine that also had an onboard hydrogen generator that produced more hydrogen than the engine used in the 1980s. Of course, he got a call from people from the petroleum industry that send the Yakuzis in to say, no, you can't build it, can't do anything with it. We've heard these things before about carburetors that give cars over 100 miles per gallon, and I've done almost that on my cars myself. But there is other technologies that produce free energy. The latest one coming up is a shaped magnet that produces a rotational field with no input of energy to it. Also, the noble gas engine, also known as the Pope engine, nothing to do with Nick Pope, but in the 1950s.
Or the Roman Catholic Pope.
Right. A gentleman by the name of Pope developed an engine that would run on noble gases and just a thimbleful. Imagine this, a thimbleful in a sealed engine would run an engine for over 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, just amazing. So there are technologies out there that will give us, next to free energy. Of course, it costs something to produce those things, but once you get it done, it's almost free over a long period of time, very low cost. And I do have a question about the Great Pyramid. I've done a lot of reading on the Great Pyramid. I actually came across an information source that said there's more books written on the Great Pyramid, or almost as more books written on the Great Pyramid as books written about and on the Bible. Over 6,000 books, 3,000 of them coming out of China alone. Now, my interest in the Great Pyramid is the two air shafts that point out, one to Orion, and I'm told one actually points out to the other star constellation, the Seven Sisters, the Pleiades. Now, in the Book of Job, it says that the Pleiades, Job says, that's where all good things or God things come from, and I surmise, and this is just my surmising, that is where planet heaven is, and that is where God resides, whether it's in this physical realm or in another dimension, I can't tell you.
Well, 38.
I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and what if you've done any research into this.
Right. Well, a lot of the Mexican pyramids point to the Pleiades, but we feel, the Pleiades and Orion are right next to each other, and I think even if you look at it in a three-dimensional model, not just in the two-dimensional, heavens that we're looking at when we look out in the night sky. So basically, we feel that Orion and the Pleiades are really like a stargate into other dimensional realities, and I think that's something that Dr. Herjack had a unique experience about, that the Pleiades is part of our own, we'll say, civilization, if you consider us part of the stars, which we do. We don't think we completely evolved on this planet alone. So we would agree with you in a certain sense, but it seems that Sirius, the star Sirius, which is another star system, and Orion are the real main points of the pointing of the Great Pyramid of the air shafts or the star shafts, and then on one side, and then Alfred de Tacones on the other. Now, what's interesting is the Mexican Mayan pyramids also show a similar cosmology where they have Orion as like their father figure,
representing the positive forces.
And then they have like the area of Alfred de Tacones
to be the experimental gods or the trickster forces. So, again, the roadmap is very large, but again, God's word in all of its different translations, be that in Aramaic or in ancient languages, Coptic, et cetera, points generally to the Pleiades and Orion for the people of God who are awake and self-realized to look to. That would be the area where the sons and daughters of light would manifest themselves. And the unique arrangements we have found in rural cultures is most of them do orientate their temples and pyramids and sacred areas to these two constellations.
Let's go to Mark in Los Angeles, first-time caller for Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I heard you discussing a great show, by the way. Good to be talking to you, but I heard you talking about Boris Said, and I wanted to jump in.
Sure.
I was living in Seattle in the 90s, since the 80s, at a recording studio, and got a call from Boris in 96 around this this time, and again later on, but Tom Danley, who had recorded the audio there in the filming of the Mysteries of the Sphinx, and he was the one that had recorded, oddly enough, direct-to-DAT tape using Bruhl and Kier testing microphones, Swedish mics that go all the way down to 0 hertz. But I was the one that actually got that DAT tape, and for the first time, did a spectrograph on it and discovered these subsonic frequencies in this tape that was tested. It was like when you do, when he recorded it, when you're doing documentaries, you record the background. And then if you need to dub over it, you add that to the overdub voice so it matches the on-set voice. Yeah.
It's a small world.
Right. So Boris was one of our best friends, and we went back also later than that also to do more testing, and your caller is absolutely right because, a lot of times you get what's called overtone frequencies, but in this case, actually with the King's Chamber in particular, you get undertone frequencies. So you're getting the consciousness, this can relate to one of the first callers, actually into, we'll say, the alpha frequency of the brain waves because you're getting sounds going down into that theta and alpha alpha frequency, and that's part of the vibration that's present in the King's Chamber.
JJ and Desiree, great information. Thank you so much. The name of the book, Giza's Industrial Complex. We'll be back to talk about spirituality, reincarnation, and the other side.